or at lls.org.
Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. We're also streaming live on Facebook.com/WMNF News. I'm Sean Canaan. We have two topics on the show today. My first guest is president of the St. Pete Rent Control Coalition, and we'll talk about skyrocketing housing costs. Then later in the show, we'll hear from our second guest about a demonstration coming up Friday in Ybor City. It's called Lights for Liberty. It's part of a nationwide protest against human rights abuses of migrants at the border. And we'll take your calls about both these topics. The number is 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. Or you can text 813-433-0885. And I should remind people that the Courtney Campbell Causeway is still closed in both directions because of a traffic accident investigation there. So the Courtney Campbell Causeway between the Clearwater area and the Tampa Airport area is closed in both directions. Well, let's begin with the show with the statement, the rent is too damn high. That's not just a political party in New York anymore. Our first guest today on Midpoint is Glitz Litzenberg. He's president of the St. Pete Rent Control Coalition. Welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, Glitz.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Thanks so much for coming in. Well, so first tell us, what is the St. Pete Rent Control Coalition?
We're a local political action committee dedicated to establishing a long-term rent control in St. Petersburg.
What is the situation with rent in St. Petersburg, for example? How have rents changed over time?
Well, across the whole city, it was a 3% increase in rent last year. But what we're seeing is really pockets of gentrification that are driving up rents significantly in certain portions of the city.
And most people probably know what gentrification is, but just in case someone isn't familiar with that term, what does that mean?
Gentrification is when investors come in and buy a property and, you know, fix and flip the property to folks who can pay significantly more than what the property was previously worth.
And so you get neighborhoods where they look a little bit nicer than they used to, but and oftentimes now it's unaffordable for the people who grew up there, who have been living there a long time. That's one of the byproducts, I guess, of gentrification.
Yeah. Definitely. The stories of people who have lived there their whole lives and been displaced and can't go to the church where they used to go to church, or, you know, see friends and family as easily, you know, seniors that are on public, transportation and spend hours and hours just getting back to their community to spend time with, you know, their friends and family.
Because oftentimes it's a little bit cheaper for housing to move out to the suburbs or to the exurbs, but there's hardly any public transportation out there. And then the drive, the commute time is a lot longer to where their jobs were.
Yeah, absolutely. I took a bus to Oldsmar once and it took me more than 3.5 hours.
From St. Petersburg?
Yeah, from almost downtown St. Pete.
Well, our guest is Glitz Litzenberg. He's president of the St. Pete Rent Control Coalition, and we're talking about rents, and specifically in St. Petersburg, but you might have some horror stories where you are. Let us know what you think about rent and rent control. The number is 813-239-9663. Glitz, you are working through neighborhood associations to encourage city councils to acknowledge the costs of housing that's going up. What's the role of the neighborhood councils in this?
So really our work revolves around grassroots activism, reaching out to neighborhood members where they live at their homes. We've been out knocking on doors. So obviously I'm not a member of every neighborhood association in St. Pete, so encouraging these neighbors to go to their neighborhood associations, join and propose these sorts of resolutions.
So what would you like to see happen? For example, what could the City Council of St. Petersburg do?
Our goal is that St. Pete City Council would pass a resolution that encourages the county to extend the homestead exemption to renters, supposing that the landlord is keeping rent increases at a certain rate, those those renters would also experience that 3% cap on their annual rent increases.
So there, I think what you're saying is that if you're someone who owns a home and you have a homestead exemption, the value that you're taxed at can only increase by a certain amount every year.
That's right.
And so you think it would be fair then for people who usually are lower income that they would get the same type of benefit into their rent. So a 3% increase, which you mentioned earlier was about the average of what it increased. So it's not like it would be a serious hardship for landlords.
No, and that's what we're seeing is that there are a lot of ethical landlords in St. Pete. The problem is that there are a few landlords who are significantly changing the cost of rent, and that would have to be the case to see some people's rents tripling, but the average rate increase across the city only being around 3%.
You know, we're talking about residential rents, of course, but this discussion just brings to mind what's happening to Central Avenue on the businesses on Central Avenue, where we're just losing this. The 600 block used to be a whole bunch of small, local, really fun businesses. And, I don't mean to detract to what's there now, but it just, you see a lot of those businesses leaving, and because the reason they state that they're leaving is because they can't afford the rents.
No, you're not detracting at all. That's very much the mood in the community is that local businesses will be driven out, and we'll end up with some generic city blocks down where high rise apartments cost $3,000 to $5,000 a month. So you're not wrong.
And turning now back to residential rents. How does gentrification affect the character of the neighborhood? We've talked about who might be able to afford to live there, but what about the character of the neighborhood?
I think when we're talking about character, we're talking about diversity. The need for complete neighborhoods that are not monopolized by certain segments of the population that can afford to pay absurd prices for rent.
Our guest is Glitz Litzenberg. He is president of the St. Pete Rent Control Coalition, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. We're also streaming live right now on Facebook.com/WMNF News. Let me read an email that just came in from David. He says, I remember reading something recently about Miami-Dade County offering some rent controls for teachers since rent is too damn high in South Florida. Does your guest see something like that as a possibility in Tampa Bay for teachers?
Yeah, so our goal is to have rent control that will protect everyone. We have floated the possibility that it might be easier to get some incremental steps towards protecting certain segments of the population, like seniors, folks on fixed incomes, like disability. Teachers is something we hadn't discussed, but it does bring to mind how much of our work involves educating people about who needs affordable housing, because so much of this discussion seems to get caught up in, quote unquote, those people moving into our neighborhood, when folks really don't know who people are that need affordable housing, like teachers, service workers, healthcare workers,
Oftentimes they call that workforce housing. So when a development is going up, that's the term that people would use to mean something that real workers can afford.
Yeah. There was a recent affordable housing project that had the potential to turn old church property into an affordable space for housing in Pasadena, and those public meetings were disgraceful. The way people talked about folks that need affordable housing, it was very classist and frankly racist.
I wasn't at those meetings, but I read about them, and it sounds like people were just afraid of having poor people in their neighborhood or something. I don't even want to say poor people. It's just people who work for a living and can afford only a certain amount of rent, that they might be moving into that neighborhood was, pretty scary thought for some of these long-term residents.
Yeah, people just don't know who needs affordable housing.
Well, I just want to remind people that our guest is Glitz Litzenberg. He's president of the St. Petersburg Rents Control Coalition, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. It's 12:15 in the afternoon, and if you're just tuning in, avoid the Courtney Campbell Causeway if you're traveling between Tampa and Clearwater. It is closed in both directions. I'll let you know if that changes. And so Glitz, there's some stumbling blocks in Tallahassee. What's Tallahassee done to make it more difficult for local communities to place rent controls?
Yeah, so there's a preemption in state law against restricting private business, specifically as it relates to property, private property operations, limiting their ability to set their own prices, essentially. What that means is that in order to have a rent control law at all, we would have to have city council declare a state of emergency as it relates to housing. And that would only allow us to have a rent control law for a year.
And I'm going to ask this question, and I'm going to guess your answer before I ask it, but would you consider the state of rents in St. Petersburg to be an emergency?
Absolutely. If we don't do something now, it's going to be too late in the very near future. For a lot of people, there's no coming back after their rent goes up. They're gone.
Then that's lost to from a city standpoint, you've lost that tax base. I guess that the calculation that the persona of the city is doing is, okay, well, now we've got other people paying higher taxes, but you've lost residents of a city that have presumably been there a long time. And besides the human cost, that just has to affect the character of the city.
Oh, absolutely. It's sink or swim, survival of the fittest. We believe that people who have been there and helped make St. Pete successful deserve to reap the rewards and be part of that community.
Well, the St. Pete Rent Control Coalition has a fundraiser tonight. What's going on tonight?
So we're going to be down at Punky's Bar and Grill on Central Avenue in St. Pete after 7 o'clock. It's a great chance to come out and support the cause. It'll be a bingo fundraiser hosted by our friend Juno Vibrance, Drag Queen Bingo.
Drag Queen Bingo. Okay, and that's tonight at Punky's on Central. Anything else that people need to know about St. Pete rent control?
The best thing you can do is call your elected officials. Tell them that you're concerned about the rising costs in rent. And the only way we're going to win this fight is by working together. So.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on WMNS Midpoint, Glitz.
My pleasure.
Glitz Litzenberg is president of the St. Pete Rent Control Coalition, and their Drag Queen Bingo fundraiser is tonight at Punky's St. Pete, and that's at 3063 Central Avenue. And we're going to be right back after this short music break to talk about a major protest against inhumane treatment of migrants. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:19. Stay with us. We'll be right back. back to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan, and it's 12:21 in the afternoon. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. You may also be watching us live on Facebook Live. That's facebook.com/WMNF News. Thanks to Blanny for filming it. Thanks to Alvaro for being our engineer, and to Frank for answering your phone calls. I want to give out the number here because you might want to call in about our next segment, 813-239-9663. dj@wmnf.org is the email, and you can text us at 813-433-0885. We turn now to our next topic and guest. Lights for Liberty Tampa is this Friday. It's at Centennial Park in Ybor City beginning at 7 o'clock, and it's a nationwide protest against the human rights abuses at the border. It's a vigil to end human detention camps. And joining us now is one of the local organizers, Aida Machkich. Welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, Aida.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for joining us, for coming to the show and being on the show to tell people about this demonstration. What is Lights for Liberty?
Sure. So Lights for Liberty is a coalition of people, many of whom are mothers, dedicated human rights activists. Also, we've partnered with international, national, regional, and local communities and organizations who believe that these fundamental rights are non-negotiable, and we're willing to protect them.
And we're hearing about a lot of different abuses on the border, and we'll probably talk about those throughout the show, and maybe our callers will bring up some of the things that we're hearing about. But we're hearing about children in detention, children separated from their families, people not given enough supplies to just have basic needs. What made you get involved in this? What is something that really affected you and made you want to get involved in Lights for Liberty?
Well, as a local organizer, I've worked on different initiatives, but this one really brings it home for me. I am a refugee to this country. I'm an immigrant, a war refugee to this country. And just to see the vile and inhumane conditions that these children, mothers, humans are facing right here at home in our home state of Florida, in Homestead. It's absolutely devastating. And this is not the America that I came to. This is not the America that provided a safe place for me to come to. So I felt it not only personally that I have to get involved, but all of us do. And our silence is complicity in a way. So...
do you feel like talking more about your personal story, about where you came from and what the circumstances were?
Sure. So I immigrated in 1995, January of 95, from former Yugoslavia, currently known as Bosnia and Herzegovina, due to the civil war, a genocide that was committed against the Bosnian Muslims in Bosnia. The war was between factions within former Yugoslavia, which prompted a genocide, like I said, that occurred in my country, and that we seeked refuge in the United States.
And you were able to get refuge, and I assume refugee status here.
Correct.
In the United States. Can you draw parallels or maybe contrasts between the people seeking refugee status at the border,
Absolutely.
The southern border right now?
Absolutely. You have to understand that these people are not fleeing their home because they want a vacation in Florida, you know? These people are fleeing because they want better conditions for their families. They want safety, security for their families, for their children. And any parent, as a mother of four children, any parent willing to risk the gruesome attempt to immigrate to this country means that they are leaving something that's far worse than they will be enduring coming into the United States. And seeking asylum is a legal right to any human being.
I've heard President Trump or his supporters say things like, well, they're taking advantage of this. Yes, people are allowed to seek asylum, but these are just people who are just trying to cross the border, and they're using the asylum process as an excuse to just jump ahead in the line of what would normally be a regular immigration. Is that something that you think is happening, that people are pretending to be refugees when really all they are is they're just, I guess, what you'd call regular migrants?
I absolutely disagree with that, Sean. And we have images such as that of that father who had his child strapped to him, trying to immigrate here, And that, to me, should paint, and everyone else should paint a picture of, no, they are not just skipping the line to get in to this country. They are taking drastic measures to ensure safety and protection for their families, for their children. And when you take into consideration the amount of passages or ways that we have limited these individuals from coming here legally and seeking that immigration, that has to be taken into consideration as well, and why they are taking such drastic measures to come here.
Our guest is Aida Machkeach. She's helping to organize Lights for Liberty in Tampa this Friday. It's at Centennial Park in Ybor City. It's a nationwide protest against human rights abuses at the border and a vigil to end human detention camps. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. And if you would like to join this conversation, if you have a question or a comment that you'd like to make, 813-239-9663 is the number to call in. You can email dj at wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. I will try to get to some of these texts and emails in just a second, but I want to continue the conversation with Aida. And let me read a couple of paragraphs from Newsweek yesterday.
Sure.
Senator Jeff Merkley slammed migrant detention centers for children on Sunday, pointing out that many are run by for-profit companies, mm-hmm. and that the U.S. was currently establishing the largest child prison in American history to deal with immigrant children. Merkley, a Democrat who represents Oregon, made the comments during an interview on NBC News Meet the Press, criticizing legislation recently passed by Congress that provided $4.6 billion in additional funding for the Department of Homeland Security to address the growing number of detained migrants in overcrowded facilities. Merkley said it did nothing to change the blockade of children at the border being left in Mexico. It did nothing to change the for-profit system of Homestead, which is a detention center in South Florida where 3,200 children capacity, that's the largest child prison in American history, is being established. Mm-hmm. And the company being paid $750 a day to lock up children, no incentive to get them into homes. Well, there's a lot to unpack from that quote from Senator Merkley in Newsweek, and he was also, you know, on the NBC's NBC News Meet the Press yesterday talking about that. But let's look at some of those things. First of all, the first thing that might jump out at people is it's the largest detention center for children in American history is happening here in our state.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts about that?
Well, I was also reading that they want to shy away from calling it a concentration camp and to refer to it as a detention center. And like I mentioned, on where I come from, concentration camps were a large part of during the war what they had. And let's look at the definition of a concentration camp. It's a it's a camp concentrating a large body of people and not allowing them basic necessities to be able to even move around freely. So let's call it what it is. It's a concentration camp. You have to understand that we have had to date 24 adults and 6 children die in these camps. That is a large number, and this is in the we can define as a 21st century concentration camps right here at home. So absolutely the sheer lack of providing them necessary care, providing them necessary medical needs, making sure that the children are tended for, making sure that we have basic things such as, you know, toiletries for these women and children is not being met in these camps. And I was showing my children the other day some of the images that were finally released from these camps. They're quite literally in cages. And my son saw this, my 11-year-old son, and said, "Mom, it looks like large dog crates." Can you imagine? Just put that mental image of having children in these large metal crates, right? And so to me, it's absolutely horrifying. And this is not the America that I know or that we are. And I know we can do better.
And we'll go back to talk more about what Senator Merkley was saying and mm-hmm. some of the examples that he brought out. But I want to remind people that our guest is Aida Machkeach, and she is an organizer and is helping to bring Lights for Liberty Tampa to Tampa this Friday. Let's talk about the logistics of that. It's at Centennial Park in Ybor City, and it starts at 7. What can people expect if they go there and if they participate?
Sure. Like you said, it is at 7 p.m. On July 12th. We will meet at the Centennial Park. We do have a program lined up with some speakers. We are also involving our interfaith faith communities. We will have clergy there that will be addressing. We will also have activist organizers that have gone down to Homestead and that have witnessed, and they can talk more about what they have witnessed. We will also have employees from Florida Immigration Coalition who have worked closely to ensure that organizers are at Homestead every day, raising awareness and standing up to these atrocities being happening in our country. We will also, after the short program, we will be marching to the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol office that is on 7th Avenue, I believe. Yeah.
Our guest is Ida Matchkeach, and she's helping to organize Lights for Liberty, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. Let me read an email or two before we go much further, and we do have people on the line as well, so we'll get to them as soon as well. 813 did not sign this text message, but says, we are having mass migration from Central America due to climate change, poverty, income inequality, and the failed war on drugs, issues that Trump does not care about. Would you like to address anything that person said about why some of the causes of this mass migration?
Those are all absolutely things that are some of the reasons why, but we also have to look at it collectively, that this administration and some of the key things that this administration has propelled is racism in this country. And we have to look at immigration from other parts of the world and how that is being dealt with, as opposed to immigrants coming from Latin America, right? And how are we treating immigrants coming from European countries? So looking at that, it's a collective, I think, intrinsic reason as to how this administration has addressed these issues of migration into the United States.
Let me thank this person who just made a donation during Radioactivity, $50 to WMNF. Thanks to Elizabeth Mitchell in Tampa. And she said she enjoyed the interview this morning. So thank you for that tip jar donation. You can always go to WMNF.org and make a donation to your community radio station. You can also call our business office at 813-238-8001. But right now we're taking calls at 813-239-9663. And we're going to take a call right now from Russell in Tampa. Hi, Russell.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling in.
Couple comments. First of all, everything I'm hearing virtually guarantees Trump's reelection. Let me start with, These migrants came here, are coming here voluntarily, knowledgeable of the risk. To compare that to the involuntary mass extermination of 6 million Jews is an outrage.
I don't know who compared that. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
No, your guest just said these are concentration camps. And to compare the two,
there's
a level of ignorance that is mind-blowing.
So do you want to answer that? Because
absolutely. I think, and thank you for actually highlighting that. One of our co-organizers for Florida Immigration Coalition, Tomas Kennedy, had addressed that correlation where the definition of a concentration camp is not necessarily only to... it's not taking away from what our Jewish brothers and sisters experienced. But the definition of a concentration camp is that of concentration of a body of people and taking away things of human rights, such as having the ability to move around, having necessary things like medicine, toiletries, anything provided to them. That is not to compare it to what Jews went through during the Holocaust or take away from that by any means, but that is to highlight that there are different levels of concentration camps. I was referring to in comparisons to what Bosnia and Herzegovina went through in the concentration camps that we experienced in our former Yugoslavia. And there's different levels. Obviously, there is no, that we know of, torture in these concentration camps, but that still doesn't take away from the definition of what a concentration camp is. I hope that that clarified it a little.
And the Japanese Americans who were interred in concentration camps during World War II, also many of them are defining what's happening now as concentration camps. I think this caller's confusing a death camp with a concentration
camp.
You can hold a mass of people without killing them all or many of them. You didn't say anything about the Nazi concentration camps.
Absolutely.
You were just because it's the same type of
wording.
Yeah, it's the same terminology.
Right.
All right. Thank you for that call, Russell. 813-239-9663 is the number to call in if you'd like to join this conversation. Our guest is Ida Machkic, and she is helping to organize the Lights for Liberty Tampa this Friday. It's at Centennial Park in Ybor City. It begins at 7:00. One of the other things that Senator Jeff Merkley said on NBC yesterday was that and this has been pointed out by a lot of people, including Rob talked about it last show, is that these private prison companies are charging the government $750 a day per child to lock up the child. How in the world can a private company get away with charging the U.S. government that much for the very little, it seems like the very basic services that these children are getting?
That's a great question, Sean. And I think it absolutely deserves answering, but that also has to look at the privatization of prison systems here in the United States. And that is another topic, a topic of its own, right, that we could be covering. But we have to look at it in how do we divert from that privatization of prison systems, especially the funding that's going into locking these children and women up.
A week or two ago, President Trump tweeted that they're going to begin deporting more than a million people, more than a million immigrants. So do we have any evidence that that's actually about to start? Is there evidence that that's gearing up? What are we hearing from other parts of the government? I think some parts of the government were caught off guard that the president would actually tweet that, even if they were in discussions about doing that. What would that look like? How would that actually happen? I mean, if a million people, that's that means, what's that, an average of about 50,000 per state, or I'm not doing the math right, 20,000 per state? That's a lot of people that are getting rounded up everywhere around the country.
Right.
And then what? I mean, what does that even look like?
It's scary. It really is scary to think about that. But whether or not we should take the president's tweets as facts or fiction, I think the history of his tweeting should prove to us that he does tend to do what he says on Twitter. One of the reasons why I actually got on Twitter was was to keep up with current events of President Donald Trump. So great question, and I would love to know what the answer to that is, but it is absolutely scary to think that we would be able to mass deport so many of humans seeking shelter in the United States without due process.
Our guest is Ida Machkic with Lights for Liberty Tampa, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, 12:39 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. Bill in St. Pete writes, Trump has turned our country into a criminal. So you can read on from that what you will. I also want to update you on the Courtney Campbell situation. There was a fatal crash on the Courtney Campbell Causeway. Both directions were completely closed. Now one eastbound lane is open. So this is the new information that one passenger died in that crash, and that one eastbound lane is now open, but the westbound lanes are completely closed. So thank you to the Tampa police for giving us that update. Let's go now to the phones again. And if you'd like to call in, it's 813-239-9663. We have John in Tampa. Hi, John.
Yeah, hello. You there?
I'm there. Would you like to tell us what you have on your mind?
Yeah, like the same thing the guy called before. The concentration camp, when you people say the people can leave and go back to the home country they came from, why do you call them concentration camps if there's, the door is open that they can go back to the home country? If they don't want to go back, that's a different thing altogether. If they don't want to go back to Nicaragua, El Salvador, all those places, but, you know, how can you call them concentrated when they come here illegally and people who came here, like my family came legally, have to go through all this? They went through all the jumping through the hoops when they left El Salvador.
Okay, John, thanks so much. I guess people really want to talk about the definition of words here, but I don't know, Ken. I think John had a lot of information wrong, but let me run this by you and see what you think. First thing, are these people who are in these, whatever you want to call them, camps, detention camps, whatever, are they free to leave? Are these doors unlocked? That's my first question. And the second question is, he said that they came here illegally, but is it illegal to come to a country and seek asylum? So I'll ask my guest, Ida, those questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean. So one, they are seeking asylum, and it is the right to any human being to come seek asylum in this country. So currently, we are holding a body of women and children in very small spaces, not giving them the right proper treatment, not giving them room to move around. Just put it in a space where it's a room smaller than someone's walk-in closet, where you have lined up bodies. Children are not being tended to. Their diapers are soiled. There was reports even the officers stenched of that smell leaving home. So no, this is not a humane treatment of any human being. And can they leave? They have to go through a process, right? And what, again, when we say they're legally not coming here, they're legally trying to seek asylum, and that is their right. So yes, there is a due process, and they're trying to do just that. And when we are limiting their movement, we're limiting their rights to have proper toiletries, proper medicine, proper treatment of children, and then separating mothers and children, that is a whole nother, however you want to define the camp that we're holding these humans, and it's not a humane treatment. And that has been highlighted even with recent images that were sent to us. So no, I do think that this is 21st century concentration camps. We are not calling them death camps because we're not torturing them. We're not killing these individuals. But like I said, this is not to compare and contrast with the Nazi death camps or any other ones. Like you had said, Sean, we have a history of that. If we look at what we did to the Japanese in this country in the similar fashion that we are doing right now to migrants seeking asylum legally here in the United States.
Our guest is Aida Machkic, and she is helping to organize the Lights for Liberty Tampa this Friday at Centennial Park in Ybor City. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. We have a few people on the line, and I've noticed that the people who have called in so far and the people on the line are all males. I will encourage women to call. I would like to hear from women. In fact, if you call in, I will put you on first if you let your phone answerer know that you're a woman. Please call in. I encourage a range of perspectives on this. 813-239-9663. Well, we should clear up some of these lines then. There's another male calling. All right. Nick in St. Pete. Hi, Nick. What would you like to say?
Hey, Sean, I didn't know you were a sexist. You want to hear women, not men. That's kind of sexist. But here's my point. They are not seeking asylum legally under international law. They are violating international law.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to entertain that. That was your start this call being ridiculous. If you don't know what sexism is, you might want to go look it up. All right, Joe in Clearwater, what's on your mind?
This is Joe. I was thinking that from these people who are not here legally was probably 100 times worse than the detention camps that they're in. Concentration camp just means there's a concentration of illegals in a camp. So another thing, I think that the most benign way to stop the influx of illegal aliens is to put up a wall. That way we wouldn't have to take them apart, the families apart, and put the fathers in one camp and the kids in another camp. But, you know, they stalk at a liberal start, don't want to do that. They, you know.
Are you still there, Joe? All right, I guess we lost Joe. All right, well, he's talking about a wall being a solution. Ida, as how have walls worked in other places in the world? Like we think of Berlin, we think of the wall between Palestine and Israel. How are walls work as barriers to migration?
They haven't. They have not, Sean. And like we've mentioned earlier, these are humans seeking shelter and protection. And when we just, this previous caller just said, they are better off in these camps, in these detention centers, than they are back home. That really struck a chord with me. Are we comparing and contrasting what environment is better? Is this where America has come to? Is this the America that we know? Is this the America that our founding fathers have built? No, I don't think so. This America was built on the premise of, give me your tired, your poor, your sick, right? And I know nowhere in shape or form should we ever be okay just locking children and women up in cages and then saying it's better than where they came from. This is not who we are, and this should never be who we are.
813-239-9663. If you'd like to join this conversation, and I'm going to reiterate, I'd like to hear from women. I'm kind of tired of hearing from men, I have to say, this so far today. Not to get, you know, maybe, well, who knows, maybe we'll hear from someone else very quickly, but I don't see any women. There's Jackie. All right, I'm going to put Jackie on right now. Hi, Jackie, what's on your mind? Thanks for calling.
Sean, you wretched sexist, you.
you nailed it.
Over the weekend, I had a chance to watch a documentary called Human Flow. Have you seen that?
I have not.
It came out in 2017, and it was about the phenomena of migration that's happening in and around our country and around the world. And, I kept going back and forth with this issue that's going on at the border. But after I saw that, I was like, this, you know, we have got to do something, and we got to be better prepared to intake people who are seeking asylum. And I think that's what part of the issue was. We just weren't ready for it. And even though we knew it was going to happen, I guess our president thought that we could just turn everybody away. I don't know how it happened or how they're going to fix it. But when I was watching the documentary, it appeared to be like a lot of countries were not prepared, and some of them were very unwelcoming, but then it like leveled out and they were able to figure it out. So I hope that's what happens here. Thank you.
Well, thanks for calling and letting us know about that documentary, Jackie. I had not heard of it. I'll have to take a look at it. Appreciate you letting me know about it.
Yeah, I haven't heard of The Human Flow either, but I'll definitely look into the documentary. Thank you, Jackie.
All right, thanks for that call. And I just want to remind people that my guest is Ida Machkeach, and she is helping to organize the Lights for Liberty Tampa this Friday. It's at Centennial Park in Ybor City at 7 o'clock. And it's part of a nationwide protest against the human rights abuses at the border. It's a vigil to end human detention camps. And Aida, we've been talking about this. It's 12:49 in the afternoon, and we have some people on the line. Let me go to, I'm sorry, this caller from Brooksville. I can't make out your name. Can you tell me your name in Brooksville, please?
Hello?
Leda, is that your name?
Me? No,
yeah.
This is Tina.
Hi, Tina. Go ahead,
hi.
Please.
Up in Brooksville. I'll just be very quick. Aida is a tremendous person. She's been very helpful with our diversity issues up here in Hernando County. We just love her up here, and I just want her to know that I'm going to be in Detroit at the Ever-American National Museum this week at a big forum about diversity and inclusion for the Concert of Colors. But Aida, thank you so much. I just agree with you 100%, and then some, and I'm glad you're with us and working so hard. Thanks a lot, you guys. This is great.
Thank you so much, Tina. I really appreciate you.
Tina, thanks for that call. Thanks for that. And report back on what you learn at that museum. That sounds very interesting. 813-239-9663 is the number to call in. I want to read an email or two. Here's a text that came in again, another 813 that didn't sign. Hey, sign your texts if you send it, because I don't know who's messaging. This person says, the way Trump will collect 20,000 people per state is by arresting and charging workers that do not have license to work as contractors. As soon as they arrest them, they will check to see if they are legal. So that's this person speculating about how these 1 million or more people will be rounded up around the country. And also, I should say, this is just anecdotal, but I had a person pull me aside the other day and say, I don't want to give it too much information. He said that he had some people visiting. He didn't know them, but he had them visiting from another country. I forget which country. It may have been Panama and or some other Central American country. I can't remember. And he said they were just visiting, and then they just went out and got jobs. And the company hired one as a cook and one as a housekeeper, like on the spot, without, obviously they had no documentation. So what's the role of companies in providing a market for people, for migration? Now, this is obviously tangential to exactly what we're talking about, which is the detention problem on the border and people seeking asylum. But it's just, you know, it's all related to the question of migration. And what's the role of American companies in providing a market for people to come here without going through the proper channels? All right, let's take a question from Liz in Tarpon Springs. Hi, Liz. Liz, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi.
So that text was from me. I'm the person with the 813 number. And I'll tell you where that thought came from, or at least details of what happened to me exactly. I am from Puerto Rico. I am a legal citizen of the United States, for those that don't know that. But I also own a carpentry company here in Pasco County. So that's all the information I'm going to give about myself. But what happened to me was that I was misinformed of what type of documents or license I needed to run my business. And I was new at all this. To make a long story short, I was charged with two felonies for not having a contractor's license. And I feel that, I could have been. And I've heard some comments about some stuff, people mentioning that I have dark skin. I could have easily been confused where exactly I'm from. They thought that I was, illegal person in this country trying to run a business and trying to run a company without a license. I have my license. I have my contractor's license. I have liability insurance. I have all the things that I need in the state of Florida. But I was charged with two felonies, which are now two misdemeanors in this in the state of Florida. I was arrested in front of my 19-year-old son. And I was accused of not being an illegal citizen in this country without them checking anything of my background. But before I can even explain myself to the court system, I was already arrested, and I had gone through all the shame and embarrassment in front of all my neighbors. So I was told that, you know, when I was in jail, I met some people. I met some citizens from, could be illegals, but they were from Mexico, and they were there for the same reason. And I think that that's what's happening in this area in Pasco County, is that they're arresting people to see if they are illegal or they have any type of contractor's license to run a business in Florida.
Okay, well, thanks for that information. Good luck with your, I hope everything gets cleared up with whatever legal issues you have. Well, that's good. But thanks for that information. So it sounds like based on the people that you talked to when you were going through the system, that there might be a pattern there, that this might be a way to reach, you know, to try to...
Yeah, they're doing the rounding up people from different job sites.
All right,
absolutely.
We'll keep an eye on that, Liz. Thanks so much for that call. And if you'd like, thank you. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 813-239-9663. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. My guest is Ida Machkeach, and she's an organizer of Lights for Liberty in Tampa. Let me read an email or two. Anonymous says, concentration camps equal study camps. Science and physiological studies need controlled environments. Psychological. Apologize, I didn't read that well. Job creation for graduates and the ones with money, control, profitable. Next generation workforce housing is equal to employee housing equals slave housing. So Anonymous has a lot of thoughts on both the topics that we've been talking about today. And David wrote, those who quibble with the term concentration camps should study history. Nazi death camps began as concentration camps. Hitler also began with mass deportation and graduated to mass murder. If this language offends you, it should, but that doesn't change the reality of Trump's America of 2019. So there's David's historical perspective on the term concentration camps. Let's take one more phone call right now. Haley is in Zephyr Hills. Hi, Haley.
Hi.
You're on the air. What would you like to say?
Well, I would like to say, you know, I do a lot of letter writing and signing petitions and that sort of thing. And I want to encourage people to do that like crazy if they're concerned about these issues. It's like being in the Twilight Zone to me. I just turned 61 and I literally in my life have not been so frightened at the things that are going on. You know, the level of prejudice and ignorance and, you know, this is the legacy that our president wants. It just horrifies me. And I'm really glad your speaker is wonderful. I am glad to see young people getting involved, and I want to encourage them to get involved more. It's just horrific things that are happening, and I think we need to get Mitch McConnell out of there because we can't get any decisions through with him blocking everything.
All right, Haley, thanks so much for the call. Let's hear Aida's response.
Thank you so much, Haley, and I really appreciate it. And I am absolutely in agreement with you. I think letter writing, calling your state representative senators is absolutely important, especially here in Florida, and letting them know that we are they're not voiceless. We are here. The whole world is watching. We in Florida will not stand to house one of these facilities. And I think this is the reason why we have to stand up. We have to show up. So everyone that's listening, please this Friday come out and show your support and show your alliance, allyship to this cause.
I want to remind people one more time that Lights for Liberty is at Centennial Park in Ybor City at 7 o'clock on Friday. And thank you for that call, Haley. Let's try to squeeze in one more call from Francesca in Sarasota. Hi, Francesca.
Yes, hi. I want to preface what I'm going to say with I'm as liberal as you can be. I come from New York. I grew up in Queens. I know about Trump. I despise him in every way. But I want to you to answer this question that gets thrown back at me. What if 5 million people came to our border somewhere seeking asylum? There's no way that we could process them. There's no way. What is your answer to the immigration problem in terms of making it work, making it humane, but also making there be a border?
All right, well, let's see what our guest says before the end of the show.
Thank you so much for that question. I don't have a definitive answer what the collective answer is to our issue in terms of mass migration. But one thing I am 100% certain of is not supporting or having these camps, these detention centers here in our country. We are better than that. We need to provide a safe and human humane way to deal with this issue.
Well, thanks so much for coming on WMS Midpoint Monday, Ida.
Thank you so much for having me, Sean. Pleasure being here.
Yeah, I'm glad you came. Ida Machich is helping to organize this coming Friday's Lights for Liberty Tampa demonstration at Centennial Park in Ybor City. And I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. And if you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, call me at 813-238-8001, extension 114 if you're on hold right now, or if you just want to leave a voicemail. I'll play your message in 2 weeks. I'll be out next Monday. If you missed any of this show, you can watch or listen to it on our website, wmnf.org/news. I'll get that up there this afternoon. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. Thanks to our engineers Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox, and thanks to Blanny Whalen. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero Mark Bureau will host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned now for Latino 54 coming up after MP.